Hello, hello. Welcome back to Under the Ginkgo Tree, episode 4. Today we have here with us
Harper Jones.
Hi, Harper. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Phenomenal. It's so pretty today.
Doing pretty good. It's been a beautiful week, so the mood has been up all week, which has been great. But we have you here today for understanding who you are as a person, right? Could you describe to us, like, kind of your profile at UVA?
Yeah, definitely. So I am from Connecticut. That's just background. I'm out of state. And again, more background. Came to UVA sort of not thinking that I was ever going to end up at UVA. Mm-hmm. We could talk more about that later. But on grounds, involved with a bunch of different things. The UJC, Seriatim, Journal for American Politics, UDEMS. I do a bunch of stuff in terms of like political campaigning in Charlottesville and then in Virginia. I'm really into running, love exploring Charlottesville by running. And then I also babysit for a family here, which is really cool.
That's sweet. Honestly, can you describe, you said Sarah?
Seriatim.
Yeah, can you describe what that is? I'm and UDEMS. I've never heard of both of those.
Yeah, so Seriatim is a student-run publication. It started in, I think, 2012. So we just had our 10-year plus one anniversary. Cool. And it was founded as a way of encouraging students at UVA to explore political topics, political ideas, to publish research that they had done in classes, and really to encourage the marketplace of ideas, freedom of speech, sort of political discourse, and encouraging students to submit their pieces to get published in a way that allowed them to gain recognition. Typically undergrads don't have a ton of opportunities to do that. So that's sort of one arm. We do research-based publications, and we also solicit submissions from people all around the country.
That's sweet. Wow. Okay. So I actually did hear about that. I didn't know about that. But wait, so what is your role within that?
So I actually just finished my term as editor-in-chief.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was really cool. Now I'm just a staff writer. Not just a staff writer. I'm a staff writer, which is a nice like work break. But being editor-in-chief was really cool. Definitely, I think you don't realize kind of roles like that, how much work it is until you are in it. Yeah. But it was a cool experience. Definitely a lot of emails. Got really good at mail merge and like Google and Excel spreadsheets. So yeah.
That's sweet.
Harper, I've heard so much about like your kind of childhood just from our mutual friends and hearing about how like cool and how many like different places you've lived in. And you just said that a lot of the work that your journal like focuses in on is is kind of witnessing like what's happening around the world. And I was wondering if there's one place that you lived in your childhood, or like maybe you can describe your upbringing and how that's maybe influenced your love of like what's going on in the political world and analyzing it and understanding that stuff better.
Yeah, I can do both. So I was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Okay, wow.
I'm still a Packers fan, despite only living there for 2 years. And then my family moved to London when I was about 2, and we lived there for around 8 years, a little more than 8 years. And, like, fully lived in London, went to British schools, had a British accent. Like,
oh,
my
wow.
little brother, who's 15 now, was born there. Everyone except my dad is a British citizen. So really got the full experience. And then we moved from London. I think I was about to turn 12. Maybe younger than that, maybe 11, to Hong Kong.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, really, different vibes for sure.
What was the reason for that?
My dad's job. He worked in like the healthcare division of his company, and they were just buying some healthcare companies in China, and so wanted to be in Hong Kong, and that's where the office was, which was incredible. We lived there for 3 years before moving back to the U.S., and they were very different places and also lived there for different times. I think the first thing that it did is taught me what other people think about when they think about the U.S. Mm-hmm. I think we're so frequently taught to think about the U.S. from our own internal perspective. And what that does is we put different things on people from different cultures and different countries in terms of what they should think about the U.S. But that experience, first of all, taught me that not everyone has great things to say about the U.S. and people think about it very differently, which I think is an important thing that we have to recognize, or like I want to continue to recognize being interested in politics. Mm-hmm. Also what it did was meant that when I came to the U.S., there was this whole political system that I was super unfamiliar with, but really interested by. I remember, I think the year before we left Hong Kong, My mom was filling out some, I think it was the 2012 presidential election. She was filling out her absentee ballot, and it was Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. And I was asking her who she was voting for, didn't really know anything about it. And she said, Barack Obama. And I was like, oh, is dad voting for Barack Obama too? And she said, no, he's voting for Mitt Romney. Hope I'm not outing my parents here. But and I was like, I was so confused by that concept, because it was shocking to me that my parents, who love each other and share a lot of the same values, could be voting for different people. So then a year after, we moved to the U.S. and I immediately became really intrigued. And that was a long-winded way of answering your question.
Yeah, no. That's beautiful. Was there any specific like place that you feel like you've kind of brought with you? I've talked with a lot of like, I think it's two times that I've had a podcast with someone who is from a like a program that is like, I can't believe I'm forgetting the word. Like you, a diplomat. Yeah. Okay, so like diplomat kids who like go with their parents to different countries. And what I've kind of found is that they kind of really take in one place a lot. Do you have a place where that's kind of your core? Or is it more spread out?
Yeah, I'd say definitely different experiences from different places, but probably London, living in the UK, just because I was there for so long. And I mean, my conscious memory starts in the UK.
Yeah.
Like at 2 years old, I don't really think I remember. I don't remember at all moving,
yeah.
You know, being in school, but I do remember growing up in the UK. And it was interesting because I think it was one of the times in my life where I felt most settled, because it was all that I had ever known. And so moving around after that gave me an understanding of what it was like to be a new kid and feel unsettled in a place and have to sort of work to put down roots, which I think is an incredible experience and one that like I want my kids to have, because I think it makes you a more well-rounded person,
more resilient.
Totally. Yeah. But I also think that London was the place where like I felt at home, which is weird now as an American, like without a British accent. Like people are like, wait, you lived in London? Like,
yeah,
you're a British citizen, you don't have an American accent. So it's definitely now cognitive dissonance a little bit. But I studied at Oxford this summer and was back in London.
Really? I think I'm going to do that program this summer
too.
Yeah, I just applied.
Oh my gosh, it was incredible. I mean, I could talk about it all day long. It was so incredible.
Really?
But
okay,
being
great.
Back there, being in London, I was like, wow, this just really, it was a big moment. It meant a lot to me.
Oh, that's sweet.
Wait.
Yeah, I have a kind of quick one, because I think you're going to be able to answer this quicker. Actually, maybe not. No pressure on that. But where's home?
That's a hard question. When people ask, I say, like, where are you from? Where's home? I say Connecticut.
Right.
It just makes sense. It's where I went to high school. I actually wrote a college essay about that, like being asked that question, and how I didn't really know how to answer it. And I think if you read at all about like diplomat kids or third culture kids, which is another term basically describe what you were just talking about, people who have moved around a lot and live in places that their parents aren't from, they don't know how to answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes it sounds pretentious. Like I'm never going to respond to be like, well, it's a really long story. If I'm just meeting someone off the street or in a class, I just say Connecticut, because that's where I went to high school. That's where my parents live. I don't know. I think Connecticut has at UVA become more and more of a default, just because that's how I introduce myself most frequently. That's what people associate me with.
Well, whenever you're back to England over the summer, did you feel like you were at home, or like did you have a sense that like take a deep breath? I'm finally where I'm from.
Yeah, in a way, there were definitely moments where I felt like kind of a loss for what I had, because I would walk around my family also moved around a lot in London. I think we lived in like seven different places, which is all kind of in the same two neighborhoods. But I like did this whole one day, like walking tour of all the places we had lived, and like went by my old schools and things like that. And it was cool, 'cause I would remember like certain roads, but then at other times I was like, I'm completely lost. Like I have no idea where I'm going. And that is kind of was a weird moment to be like, huh, like I'm not really from here. In the same way that you are from, we think about being from someplace.
Right.
Okay,
that's fair.
I have a question that, like, I think might pivot the conversation about home a little bit, but I was thinking about something that you mentioned. You said, like, you're from so many different places and people interpret, like, U.S. politics so differently. And I kind of recognize that as a benefit. Like, I know that you're a political social thought major. You guys are inhaling information, like, at a rate that I actually don't understand. You guys read so many books a day. It's crazy. But especially like when interacting with like politics and culture, I think that there's such a benefit to being able to see things from a different perspective or have respect for another side. You just said like your parents were voting for two different parties. And I was kind of going to ask, do you think that you approach understanding information or understanding like different political issues, like for example, right now, obviously like Israel-Palestine, differently because you have more of an appreciation for understanding things from two different perspectives? Or do you think that you immediately like side yourself with one?
I would like to think that I don't pick a side, which has been something leveraged against me in some circumstances. Like I've gotten criticism before that, like one of my roommates, we were actually talking about Israel-Palestine and I was just trying to like talk out each side.
Yeah.
And she was like, you look at this so judiciously, you're so sort of straightforward and factual, and there's no emotion.
Right. Yeah.
And it was I mean, it was like well meant, but it was in a way a criticism. I do think it's maybe influenced by my background. I think it's just also influenced by the fact that I love learning and I love an argument to some extent, but I like to be able to know both sides because I think there are nuances to every perspective. And I think the more we recognize that, the better able we are to come to resolutions in conflicts, the better able we are to talk about our differences in a way that's productive rather than just sort of like yelling into the echo chamber or yelling at each other. But I don't know. I mean, totally there are things where I am very like have a stance on. And I think the criticism is like, oh, well, you're like, you just flip flop, you know, you don't have values. I don't think that's true. I think you can have values and still seek to see both sides.
Yeah. Your values are empiricism.
Totally.
Of making the right judgment. I full-heartedly agree with your position.
Yeah. And I think everyone should be able to reserve the right to change their mind.
Yeah.
Like we're constantly growing, in college, but also beyond college. And the fact that we should be winnowed into one perspective or opinion our entire lives, I think is really limiting and also means that no one is encouraged to grow or like feels like they can grow themselves.
Right.
So
do you think that it's the places that you've been like, or do you think it's the people that you've met who've created this idea? Do you think it's like the fact that you've been so many places or people in these different places have had these different mindsets?
That's a great question. I think it's a combination. I would say definitely being in certain environments helps that, but I also think it's people. I think it's people also who encourage you to speak your mind and voice your opinion and encourage you to make mistakes and try theories out. I think if you can find that one person or two people like that, whether it's a friend or a mentor or professor, anywhere you are, I think you will grow and you will be better off for it. I think definitely, probably more the people than the place. I think the place can influence the context in which you're interpreting different events, but I think it really comes down to people wanting to hear your opinion. Mm-hmm. And I don't think those people exist everywhere. So
I'm kind of curious, do you have one like stark memory at UVA where you did change your mind? And follow-up question to that is, did you eliminate like emotion when making that argument, or was there like, do you think that it played a larger role and that's why you maybe changed your mind?
Oh, that's a really hard question.
My bad.
I'm trying to think. A moment where I changed my mind.
Or like, this can honestly like be like any topic of conversation. Like I know like I'm actually taught things by my roommates every day where I'm like, oh wow, I'm an idiot. That's obviously the right answer. So therefore I'm going to change my opinion. Or it could be like, I learn about something for months and I'm like, oh wow, like I'm just thinking about this in a much different way.
This is kind of, yeah, I don't know if this has changed my mind. This is UVA adjacent. So last summer, I traveled actually to Israel and Palestine.
Oh, wow.
As part of a program that's run at UVA. And I honestly didn't know a lot about the program before I went on it. I was told about it by a friend. It seemed really interesting to me. So I applied. In hindsight, I wish that I had done more research just because I would have liked to have been better informed. The program was amazing.
What's the program called?
It's called Perspectives. Okay. And it's run through the Brody Jewish Center, which what I mean to say when I say I wish I knew more is there at UVA was some resistance to the program being run. And I didn't know anything about that. And I wish that I had, because I think I would have been able to make a more informed decision about going on the trip. I don't think I wouldn't have gone, because I think I learned so much from that, especially now. I mean, in May, none of us really could fathom what would happen in several months afterwards. But going on that trip, I mean, completely changed the way that I view the conflict now, but also just ongoing conflicts in the Middle East and in the world more generally. And I think that goes back to seeing both sides. Like I said, the argument with my roommate was about Israel-Palestine. And I think, I don't know if I changed my mind, but I think my perspective was broadened in ways that like it couldn't have been had I not been in that program, had I not been at UVA. I had a friend at UVA who had encouraged me to apply for it. And I know that's kind of vague, but like,
yeah.
No, not at all.
Just, we basically on the trip, we went to a bunch of different places, talked to different stakeholders from generals in the IDF to members of the Palestinian Authority, mm-hmm. to journalists, to, we spoke to a Druze woman one day who cooked us this incredible meal, just a bunch of different people to really open up conversation on the conflict and what different people were thinking about it. Now, definitely that has changed. I think we left the trip with a lot of hope for the future.
Yeah.
And I don't know what people who are on the trip would say now. I would say definitely the hope is still there, but definitely clouded by some pessimism. But I think being on that trip was a really clear articulation of me that like everyone has opinions and it's okay that you're not always going to agree on things, because there were pretty severe disagreements on the trip. And I had a friend who was on the trip the other day say to me like, oh, you always do this, referring to me kind of being like contrarian and challenging. I guess on the trip I challenged some of the speakers that we talked to and pressed them on questions, and I think part of that is me just wanting to know more, and part of it is me like not wanting to buy into a certain narrative. So I guess it's kind of changing my mind, or opening my mind, I guess.
So I have a question, kind of actually just to pick on that last word that you used, narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And being someone who works in politics reporting, or an overall, politics reporting, like, how would you say that use of words now has, like, I'd say that there's many, many modern phrases, like, let's say, like, fake news, narrative, conspiracy. Many words like that are used kind of not willy-nilly now, mm-hmm. but more frequently. And how do you feel about like the actual use of those words coming into major prevalence in kind of media reporting?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think in the political context, like everything has a narrative.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to shape something the way they want to. And that's just something you have to accept. And I think if the sooner you know that, the better you are able to like make decisions and evaluate different people and different policy options that they're presenting. I really struggle with the word fake news and like dog. I kind of think it's a dog whistle. And I think dog whistles like it really don't do much except degrade trust in the news media.
Gotcha. What's your definition of a dog whistle?
Obviously, typically it's used in racial context, but a dog mm-hmm. whistle is just something to me that incentivizes a group of people to either pay better attention to an issue or cues them into some secret hidden connotation that's related mm-hmm. to the issue. So in the mm-hmm. context of fake news, it would be related to sort of the Trumpism that's associated with a rejection of the liberal leaning news media.
Sure. Okay.
But yeah, I think democracy relies on a press that is important. Sorry,
mm-hmm. it's raining. Yeah, it's really hard.
Do we want to go sit over there?
Yeah,
just underneath
the
little.
Let's do it.
Okay, so we're gonna do a quick pause. We'll be right
back.
And we are we're back now in Roshan's room. So shout out Roshan, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Roshan.
I don't actually know where we were.
Yeah, I also.
we were talking about like having an open perspective on, or like being able to empirically understand people's arguments,
mm-hmm.
And having that open mind. Then we went to talking about which impacted you most, the people or the place.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were talking about your trip.
Changing your mind.
Yeah.
Then there was a question after
I
that.
I kind of have a question.
Okay,
I don't
just do that. Yeah, let's just start a new flip.
Well, you said that like people have really impacted you and like kind of influenced your thinking. I was wondering if there's like one person at UVA. I mean, I know that you're like very close with your, like with Isaac, the PSD director. But is there someone who's like taught you a lot on how to think or like how to learn that you think has like fundamentally changed your trajectory or like how you go about being a student?
Yeah, probably Isaac. yeah, Isaac Reed, who's the director of PST and a professor in the social department, is incredible. And part of the reason why I picked PST, he, I mean, I've only known him for like, how long's the year been?
2 years.
Not even, like, because the program, PST started the beginning of third year. So basically I've known him from the beginning of this year. But I think what PST does is really emphasizes a liberal arts education, which maybe is a buzzword in like today's higher education discourse, but just the idea that there's something to be learned, something to be learned from many things, and that one person can take one thinker or one book and look at it in a million different ways. And yeah. I think the PST program and the way Isaac structures the PST program is really meant to do that, because essentially every week we read a book and then we write a response paper on it. And there are no guidelines for the response paper, which I think is incredibly other than there's a 500 to 800 word count, which I like increasingly, probably consistently go over, because I'm very verbose, as maybe you can tell by my answers, and I just like cannot keep it down. But there's no prompt, and we just kind of write what we want to write about. It's not write about this theme in the class, or write about this chapter, or write about how this character deals with XYZ. It's literally pick what's interesting to you and write about it. Compare it to a random novel you read in an English class. Compare it to a math problem, anything. I think that type of intellectual curiosity is missing in a lot of classes, not at UVA, just in general, and in a lot of students' approaches. And I think the way that Isaac does it, and maybe it's not even intentional, but maybe it's just the way I've interpreted it, is just this complete freedom to think, and as I was saying earlier, to make mistakes and to just test different things out. I mean, the paper I submitted last week had like asterisks and yellow highlighted parts in it where I was like, I know I want to go somewhere, but this is already too long, so I'll come back to it. I'll send you a longer version. And he encouraged me to do so. So I just think that excitement to learn is something that he really tries to emphasize.
Wow, so probably, do Isaac. You love all of your assignments? Like, I feel like almost no student at UVA can be like, I love everything that I'm learning.
Probably not all of them. Definitely not all of them, because no one loves everything. And I think, obviously, like, there are moments where most Sundays I go through sort of the five stages of grief, primarily denial, and then it's like 2 o'clock on a Sunday and I realize that if I don't write the paper now, I never will. Normally it involves some texting back and forth with people in the cohort, reminiscing on all the days of the week and we could have spent reading and doing our paper. But I think it's more about your approach to learning, and realizing that, again, this is cheesy, again, like, not everything is awesome, but that learning is a privilege and that education is a privilege. And I think I would be bummed if I looked back on my 4 years at UVA and thought to myself, dang, I could have applied myself in a class more, or darn, I really should have read that book rather than skimmed the chapters. And that is not to say that I don't skim, because PST is the art of the skim. But that, like, this is such an incredible opportunity being at UVA and being in college, where aside from the constraints of extracurriculars and wanting to hang out with your friends and have a balanced life and applying to jobs, because no doubt those pressures exist, that you really just get to learn in a vacuum, in a way.
Do you think that in 10 years you'll have a similar opportunity to like have no prompt, and like, would you want to work in a job which is so open-ended and like you're kind of able to just freely talk and have opinions and learn like that, or would you want a more structured?
So that's the thing I've really struggled with, because like I said, I love learning. If I could be in school for the rest of my life, and I know that's a hot take, I would.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, like I would go to school forever.
So is there no point where at which you want to apply your knowledge? So we're both engineers, so we're kind of in it's school of applied science and engineering.
Totally.
So the purpose of my learning is I learn basic concepts and then I apply them. That's what that's like who I am. Is I want, if I learn something, I'd like to apply what I've learned.
Mm-hmm.
Are you more of someone who loves just learning and just having that knowledge? What do you like doing with the knowledge once you've gained it?
I think that thinking can be applying your knowledge. And I think in like my time at UVA, what has been really rewarding is when I'm able to apply stuff from other classes to classes that I'm currently in. But that being said, I think being interested in politics I apply a lot of the theory that we talk about in PST and in my other classes. I'm also a double major in history, so I'm really fascinated by the way that history influences politics and the way that history does or does not repeat itself. Because I think that history is a pendulum and it swings back and forth.
Yeah.
So I think in some ways, like when I think about current events and interpreting our current climate in terms of politics, in terms of culture, in terms of society, in a way it is using my knowledge, even if it's just a silly little thing like, oh, wow, that thing that someone said on the news really reminds me of this XYZ, quote from 200 years ago in Plato, or I don't know, Plato's not even 200 years ago, but from Plato that we read. But I do think, I mean, I want to go to law school, which is, okay, and like then applying my knowledge to be in public service law is the dream. And I think that is very antithetical to where I am right now, which is saying that I would love to learn for the rest of my life. So that's definitely something I've struggled with and honestly gone back and forth with Isaac about it a little bit. And I don't know if I have the answer yet, but I think there's something to be said about constant learning. And the UVA cliche is that like we're first, second, third, and fourth years, because Thomas Jefferson said, you're never done learning, which I think is definitely cliche and overused, but is also true. And I think learning and engaging with material is all about how you think about it. And you don't have to be in school to keep learning.
Harper, I have a question. I'm like dying to know about this, because you just talked about learning so much and like how you're continuously learning, like, and I don't think that that stops outside of the classroom. Like, it's very clear that you're having very intentional conversations with your friends, whereas like some friends might be discussing like what frats are throwing this weekend. You're clearly talking about
it's
like
a combo.
Ethics and like new philosophers on the block. And I'm kind of curious, what is your dining table conversation look like growing up? Because I know that your dad, I think, maybe am I right, has like really influenced how you like interact with learning. Please, like, I would love to hear more about like your growing up and how that might have influenced what you just said.
Yeah, I mean, my dad is probably one of the smartest people I know, and he does a very applied job. He's in like M&A advising, so it's like a pretty applied job, and not one that you have a lot of time to like read books or do what you would think of as classic learning in a school environment. But he just has an incredible memory and remembers facts like it's nobody's business, which is one of the coolest things about him, and random facts too. So I think that growing up was like always an example, like, oh my gosh, my dad has all this cool knowledge, I wonder where he gets it from. My dinner table conversations growing up, I don't remember. I mean, my parents, like, neither of them are educators, so it wasn't, and I don't think it was intentionally curated in a way that would foster some dialogue. I have two younger siblings. But I do think my parents really emphasized family dinner in our family, like always sitting down almost every night. Obviously got older. As we got older, it got harder. But sitting down and having a conversation, which I think I'm really lucky to have that tradition in my family. And that's one thing that just encouraged me to want to keep learning, keep talking and having conversations. But more recently, I think my family is quite sick of me because I like to stir the pot and bring things up. And my younger siblings, who I love dearly, will roll their eyes and say things like, can we talk about anything else? Because my dad and I will go back and forth sometimes. And there's all love, but sometimes my siblings are just like, this is miserable. Like, I left school to come back to hear you guys fight about some stupid like bill in Congress, or about, I don't even know, like what the Fed should do about policy. I don't like, just so I think my family gets kind of sick and tired of it. But then again, like I said, my family has always been super supportive of like having conversations, and supportive of me wanting to test out various theories at the dinner table.
Yeah.
Do you think you look for that in like your current friendships?
Totally. I think there's a balance. Like, I think no one wants to have the friend that all they want to do is talk about politics or talk about what they learn in school. And I'm definitely the same way, but I think what I do look for is people who care about other people enough to engage in those conversations if the other person wants to, and also just people who are passionate. It doesn't matter really to me what you're passionate about, I mean, as long as it's not like offensive or hurting people. But you know, if you really think something is cool and exciting, I want to be your friend because I want to hear about it. And I think going like back to UVA, that is what has made my experience so special. I was writing this application the other day, and it asked me what one of my proudest achievements at UVA was. And there are a couple like back pocket classic answers. And I was sitting there and I had some fatigue from writing the other application questions, and I was like, honestly, the truest thing in my head right now is friendship and my friends. And that's what I'm so grateful at UVA, is I feel like I've had so many friends that are like what I've described, that are willing to have those conversations, that are so cool, so interesting, doing interesting things, like you guys on this podcast. Yeah. This is like, doesn't exist everywhere, but I think UVA, there's a real culture around that. So yeah, I do look for it in friends, but it's more so being passionate about something and being willing to listen rather than a specific thing.
Yeah,
that's sweet. I actually love that. Because so are you someone who like feeds off of someone's passion? Whenever someone like just like talks about something with like extreme passion, you also get like the butterflies in your stomach, like, totally. Oh my gosh, this is so cool.
Yeah.
Have you found any way to like share that with other people who don't have that feeling sometimes?
In terms of mine or their passions or both?
Either. I mean, have you found an effective way to communicate basically the feeling of passion?
That's a great question. Yeah. Oh, I think a lot of it comes, I mean, if you know me and you get me on something that I like to talk about, like I can go. Like I can go forever. I could talk forever. My friends say like I could talk anyone's ear off on the subway for hours on end, and like I would miss all the stops and have to go on the other way around because I really can talk. But yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know if there's a specific formula to expressing one's passions or to encouraging people to express their own, but I think it's just showing genuine interest. Mm-hmm. Like asking other people questions that are interesting and get them thinking about what they're interested in. And it doesn't have to be some big lofty policy or some crisis in the world. Like it can just be their dog or their younger sibling or the color that they want their future house to be. It could be anything, but I think asking questions that shows that you're genuinely interested in what they want to say goes a long way. And also engaging throughout the conversation. I even notice this myself. I think like I start a conversation, I'll ask a question, and then I'll like in the back of my head start thinking about something else or the next question I'm asking. And then all of a sudden I tune back in. I'm like, I missed the entire answer to the question that I asked because I was interested in about it. So I think also conscious conversation is something that we can all work on, but that I'm also like personally working on, is just engaging in conversations specifically because I want to hear what that person's saying. And staying with them throughout the entire conversation. And there are some people that I know that are really good at that. And I think that I could be better for sure.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting that you say that, because Michael and I are currently in a class. It's like about like resilient leadership, but we practice active listening, which is essentially like where the other person talks and you just have to be silent, which is one of the hardest exercises ever, because you realize that like maybe we're like innately selfish and want to hear our own, like we hear ourselves talk. But it's, oh my God, it's so difficult to like just like not say anything, not even like respond verbally and like encouragement, like, yeah, like, oh my God, that's so interesting. Yeah, totally. But I totally agree with you. I think it's so difficult to kind of just like stay in tune with a conversation, especially in college where there are like 700 things going on in our, we like start our day, and I could not tell you what I did in the first 3 hours of today. I love what you just said, and I think that we should all definitely practice some more.
So if you had to take it, seems like clearly seems like if you had one thing to take away from your UVA experience, or if you were taking something away from your UVA experience, it would be having open, passionate conversation with your ability, with an open mind.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, would there be any change to that statement?
Yeah, I think it would be that. It would just be engaging with people, even if they're not the people who you'd normally engage with, and being open to friendships. Like there are so many people that I consider friends at UVA that I would not have met had it not been for other friends, had it not been for a random club or being like at the library on a, you know, just random. I think embracing the random friendships and the randomness of college is, like Shreya's like who could technically be classified, at least in the beginning, as a random friend. But someone that I'm so grateful to know, and now like you, Michael. So I think embracing open-mindedness and friendship.
Well, thank you so much for being on Under the Ginkgo Tree, and thank you, listeners. I hope at least I learned something today. Thank you. Have a nice day.